Spring into action with the biggest fly fishing gear sale of the season. Jackson Hole Fly Company is thrilled to announce their spectacular 25% off anniversary sale. They are inviting all of us to celebrate with them. Whether you're a seasoned angler or just starting out, there's never been a better time to upgrade your equipment and save big. Are you looking for a rugged, waterproof sling pack or backpack to keep your gear dry throughout all the adventures this year? They have you covered. Are you in search of a new carbon fiber landing net? Top quality fly boxes, essential gear like fly lines and leaders? They have all that and more. This is your chance to grab some incredible deals and make the fishing season unforgettable. Don't wait. Dive into the savings today. Head over to jacksonholeflycompany.com and take advantage of this limited time sale.
I won a blank that Gary Loomis had donated as a door prize. So I asked Gary, if told him what was going on, that I was going to build this rod out for the governor's fishing opener, and I was going to give it to Jesse Ventura. And I said, I'd really like to have you sign this rod. And Gary swallowed hard, and he said, you know, I really don't sign my name on things that aren't mine.
That was Chris Christofect with his own winning giveaway story. Jesse the Body Ventura, Gary Loomis, and Lake Lady today on the Wet Fly Swing Fly Fishing Show.
Welcome to the Wet Fly Swing Fly Fishing Show, where you discover tips, tricks, and tools from the leading names in fly fishing today.
Hey, how you doing today? Thanks for stopping by the show. You know we're doing giveaways all this year, and today is no different. Today we've got Lake Lady on, and they're giving away a rod. Lake Lady Giveaway. Go to wetflyswing.com/Lake Lady Giveaway, and you can enter to win one of these amazing rods that Chris is going to dig into today. Chris takes us behind the scenes through his creation process of these one-of-a-kind custom-built fly rods. We hear about some of the legends of rod building who mentored Chris along the way, how he places guides on a rod a little bit differently than many, and my unique custom rod build experience. We're going to get Chris's story and dig in deep into the custom rod. This is pretty cool. This includes Chris not only digs into building fly rods, but also builds a lot of conventional rods. So we're going to talk about all that today. Did I mention Chris is giving away one of these rods right now? So without further ado, here is Chris Christofect from LakeLadyRods.com. How's it going, Chris?
Hey, it's great. Boy, I can't wait for summer to get here. Let's go.
Yeah, I know. I was listening to somebody out in your neck of the woods. I can't remember if it was in your state or it was in that area. They were saying, they said on social media, it was 50 degrees. I think it hit 50 and everybody was wearing shorts and t-shirts and like super happy with the weather. Is that kind of how you guys roll?
Well, yeah. As soon as we can get shorts on, that's what we're going to do. As we record this morning, it's 35 degrees. There's still snow on the ground. The lakes and the rivers are still frozen. So we've got a little bit of springtime melt to get behind us before we can get out and start wearing shorts and go fishing again. So, you know, I've got, you know, the old adage is a baited anticipation. I'm really into that right now. I can't wait.
Yeah, that's it. So basically, and that means a lot of people getting ready to go out and get out and do some fishing, right? Use some of your rods out there.
I hope so. You bet.
Nice. Well, we're going to dig into a little bit on, definitely getting into the rods you build, these unique custom rods, and just hear that story. But before we get there, I like to bring it back to fishing. A lot of times we, you know, kind of get this story just from your perspective. So talk about how you first got into fishing and then how you got into rod building.
Well, I started fishing when I was just a little tyke. We lived in West Central Kansas, and as I became an adult, I realized that I could see the end of the world through the second overpass, and I needed out of there to find places where there was water. So I think I was 5 years old. My grandmother was an ardent fly fisherman, or fly fisherwoman, and we had several sand pits around our community, and she loved to go out and fish for panfish in those sand pits. So one day, all of the grandkids piled into the car, and we went out to her favorite spot. She was catching fish, and and she wanted to change gear and laid her bamboo fly rod alongside the car. Well, the kids, 5 years old, you know, 5, 6, 7 year old grandkids, were tired of fishing, and we were playing tag and using the car as an escape route. We'd scoot through the car, you know. Mm-hmm. Well, I came out of one of the doors of the car, and I stepped on her bamboo fly rod and broke it in half. She was one unhappy grandma. I was scolded ferociously, and she demanded that I make her a new rod. So I broke off a willow tree twig and tied a piece of line on it and a hook and gave it to her and said, "Here, Grandma, here's your new rod." And that seemed to satisfy her, so I wasn't chastised so badly. To make that long story short, I still have that bamboo rod that I broke in memory of her. And that really was where I got started building rods. But then all of that laid latent until after I retired from a major international company. I spent 32 years working for them, and I had not built any outside activities. I didn't have any hobbies. It was just homework and play, you know, and I needed something to do. So I went down to our local library. This was 23 years ago. Went down to our local library, and I found two paragraphs in an old Field and Stream magazine about how to build custom fishing rods. And I thought I was the smartest guy that had ever walked on the planet. You know, I knew everything after reading those two paragraphs. I bought a kit from a supplier, built the rod, and it was just atrocious. It looked awful, just terrible. So I took it apart, rebuilt it. I think I rebuilt it three times. I still have that rod. I have caught fish with it. But I use that now to remind me as to where I started versus where I'm at now, 23 years later. I have been mentored by the legends of rod building. There are 12 of them. I've been mentored by 9 of those 12 legends who live around the world. I've been in most of their shops and have learned a tremendous amount about rods and how rods are built, both fly rods and gear rods. And, you know, it's just been it started out as a hobby, and then it morphed into a small business. And it's really been gratifying to, you know, build rods for people who really want something different and special that they can't find in a sporting goods store anywhere. The manufactured rods are all fine, of course. You know, they'll catch fish. Clearly they do. But they're not unique. They're all the same. And I really strive to build a rod that is different. Each rod is different because each of us are different. You know, we have different characteristics. We have different wants. We have different styles. And we can build a rod around all of that just through conversation. So that's what I do.
Yeah.
I have built, I don't know, 2,500 rods maybe in the last 23 years. I teach rod building, teach custom rod building to folks that want to build their own. And it's just been a whole lot of fun. And I want to keep on doing it. I just have a penance to keep at it.
That's great. Yeah. And we're going to dig into more on how your rods are unique and what you do there. I'm on the on the mentors, those people, can you talk a little about some of the names of those people? I know, I'm not sure if I know any of them or have heard the names, but can you give us a little background there?
Oh, sure. B.D. Ehler, who is from Topeka, Kansas. He probably is a world-class cross-wrapper. Cross-wrapping is a decorative thing that we do to custom rods, add color and geometric patterns and so on. He's hands down one of the best. Don Morton is a NASA scientist and also an ardent fly fisherman from Alabama. He developed a system that we call the equal angle system for placing guides on rod blanks. Fuzz Morgan, I think he's from Alabama as well. He's a feather inlay artist that just makes impeccable feather inlays. They're just jaw droppers. Chris Ward from the UK, very good friend. Chris and I have fished together several times, both in the UK and in Minnesota and in Alaska. Doc Ski is a California dude who is a world-class weaver. A lot of rod builders know who Doc is. Name dropping here a little bit.
This is great.
Dick Posey, formerly owned Lama Glass in Woodland, Washington.
Mm-hmm.
There's another guy out there in Woodland, Washington that his name is very familiar to fishermen all over the world. A guy by the name of Gary Loomis. I have sat in his office and visited with Gary for a couple of hours, and I've been in the boat with him once, fished with a prototype rod that he wouldn't tell me anything about it at all. He said, I'll have to kill you if I tell you. And it was the most fun fishing trip that I've had for some time. And then another guy that his name is Jason Bruner. He's the design engineer, the vice president and design engineer of St. Croix Rods in Park Falls, Wisconsin. Jason and I have worked together to design some gear rods, and that's been an awful lot of fun to work with him and then there's a handful of others around, you know, that have really helped me out. So yeah, I've rubbed elbows and twisted line and done some things with some people that got some pretty good pedigree behind them. Yeah,
that's right. Yeah, and the feather inlay is a cool thing that you you put together on the rod that you built for me, and it's really one of those things that just kind of makes it stick out, you know, one of the features, which is great. And the cross wraps, you know, that's something I remember, you know, because my brother and, you know, dad and family used to build custom rods back in the day, and I remember my brother did a lot of that cross wrapping. But talk about that, because you see that a lot of times more on gear rod, you know, on conventional rods, but not necessarily on fly rods. Why is that, do you think?
Well, it's just a decorative aesthetic that kind of sets your rod apart from any other. And it's sometimes it's very simple to do and really creates a wow factor. Other cross wraps are very, very delicate and difficult to accomplish, to create some geometric pattern on a rod. And it doesn't impact the rod from its power or its action or its usefulness. It's just a decorative embellishment, if you will, that sets your rod apart from the guy next to you, you know, that he just bought it off of the shelf at the sporting goods store. He bought a nice rod. There's no question of that. It'll catch fish. But this custom rod that's decorated out and personalized and built for him, you know, is way different. And the feather inlays and cross wrapping and weaving a fish symbol or a fly into a fly rod blank is really a really something different that not very many people do. And it's a lot of fun. It takes some time and effort, but there's other things that we can do too for embellishment. Yeah, it's just adds to the rod.
Yeah, it makes it custom. And maybe we could just start with that rod that you built. That might be a good example for somebody to understand, you know, a little bit about the process. And I just think of the features that stick out to me. One, just starting with like the handle, you know what I mean? You it's a really unique handle. Can you talk about that handle, how that's different than just your normal cork handle? Because it's got a bunch of different colors and kind of patterns in it, right?
Sure, absolutely. So it maybe back up just a little bit on all of that.
Yeah.
You and I have never met one another face to face. We've chatted on the phone. I understand how you want to use your fly rod. We talked about that. And the wheels inside of my head were turning during that conversation to try to figure out, yeah, this is the right blank that Dave needs for his rod. So we went further and I asked you to measure your hand and your forearm. And there's I sent you a diagram as to how to do that so that I could get the handle system for your rod to fit you just like a glove. It's unique. It's different. You're unique. You are different. You know, as we progressed into that discussion, I found out the colors that you wanted. So I incorporated those colors into the thread wraps. We talked about on your rod whether you wanted traditional ring guides or snake guides. And then we put those guides on the rod as you described how you wanted it done. The handle system I built out of Portuguese burl cork. It's really a misnomer. There is no such thing as burl cork. Cork grows on a cork oak tree. Probably 90% of the world's cork comes out of Portugal because of the mild Mediterranean climate. And it's very conducive for these cork oak trees to grow. And they harvest the bark once every 10 years off of those trees. They farm the trees just like our farmers in the U.S. farm wheat and corn and barley and hay and so on. They farm cork oak trees. So the bark is peeled off, it's allowed to dry, and then hundreds of different products are made out of that cork bark. The leavings of the production of cork then are ground up, dyes are added to it, binders are added, and it is reconstituted into a flat sheet called burl cork. And then it is drilled into rings. And then I buy those rings from a very large factory in Portugal, import them direct into my shop, in all kinds of colors and textures within that cork, and then fashion them together into a handle, and oftentimes even add some other materials. We live in an area that has a lot of birch trees. So in the spring, as the sap starts to move through the birch trees, the bark gets very rich with moisture, and trees that are being cut down for construction of a new building or something, I would never ever cut a bark off of a live birch tree because it will kill it. But I'll take the bark off of a tree that is being removed for some reason, and then press it out, dry it, punch little washers or discs from that birch bark, and then add that into a handle. And I know on the handle that I built for your rod, that's what we did. It just adds a little spice to the handle, something different.
Yep.
You would never, ever find something like that in a sporting goods store.
No.
So it's a very unique, one-of-a-kind handle. And I try really hard not to duplicate a handle that I've done before. You know, that's quite a statement to make. But I really, obviously I've had handles that probably look the same.
Yeah.
But I really strive to make something different. I don't have any inventory of completed handles that I just go to a box and grab one and ream it to fit the rod blank and put some rod bond on it, bind it to the blank and send it on to the angler. I don't do that. I build them all one at a time, just as individual as you are.
Yeah. That's good. No, and that is exactly what the handle looks like when you see it. It's definitely a unique handle, and that makes sense. And it's different than, say, if you just get a piece of cork, right, and ream it out and then throw on a straight handle, which, when I built rods, that's kind of what I've done in the past, right? You just ream out a full cork and then fit it on your rod. But this is like an actual custom, a line. And what is the style of handle? Is this like a half wells or full wells, or do you?
Yeah, your handle was a half wells because it was a lightweight rod. I think it was a four weight.
Yeah.
We built. So it was a light rod for smaller fish. So a half wells handle is appropriate for that. But we could build full wells. We could build big game handles, IFGA handles that are compliant with IFGA. I've done several of those. In fact, I just shipped one to a guy in Florida a couple of weeks ago. He wanted to be certain that it was a 10 weight, and he wanted to be certain that it was IFGA compliant because he was after a big fish and going to see if he can get his name in the book. And then the equipment's got to be follow the regulations as well. So that was kind of a fun build too.
Gotcha. So talk a little bit about the rod blank itself, because that's definitely something we've talked about on here in the past. We've had some, rod builders who have like rod building facilities in their shop, things like that. And then there's others, they're doing different forms of it. How do you go about choosing the rod? I mean, we could take it on my example or any other one, but how's that look?
Well, yeah, I do not build the blanks. I don't have the capability of putting the scrim material, that's the raw carbon fiber, onto a mandrel. I know how to do it. I have done it in a rod factory, so I understand the process, but I don't have the equipment necessary to build that rod blank in my shop. I just don't have it. So I have to buy blanks, and I really strive to buy U.S. made equipment or parts. You know, there's a limit as to what is available in the United States. Some of the rod blanks that we use are coming from Korea, from South Korea, some from Japan. We get a few from China, but that breaks my heart to have to do that.
Yeah.
But the rod blanks are really good. They're really high quality, top shelf, best of the best is the only thing that I will use. I'm not going to sacrifice quality for price. I just can't get myself to do that. It's always name brand stuff, top of the line. I'm not going to cheapen what I do to satisfy somebody that really wants an entry level, low end kind of rod blank. So my rods are really unique. They're different because of the high quality of the component parts, and then the quality of the workmanship that goes into it is really something too. And another thing that I found out about any rod blank. If you had two identical fly rod blanks, let's just, for the sake of the conversation, a 5-weight, 4-piece 5-weight, 9-foot long, those two rods will be different. They will have a different composition because they are handmade by a human. And they start out being handmade by a human. The scrim material is tacked with iron onto the mandrel. In every factory that builds rod blanks, it all starts the same way. So any deviation at all in the way that scrim material is wrapped around that steel mandrel causes the blank, the finished blank, to be different. And it's true. The rod blank will bend differently against a chart to show its curvature, its bend, its parabolic action, and therefore where the guides should be placed on that rod blank to maximize its efficiency. So I don't use a pre-described prescription as to where the guides should be placed on a blank. It doesn't work. It's not right. I let the rod blank dictate to me by stressing it to bend it into its 90-degree bend where the guide should be, so that the guide train and the line coming from the reel up through the guides to the tip top flow in a nice, smooth, straight line. Therefore, we reduce friction. We get further casts, further distance in our casting, and the rod reacts differently from a sensitivity standpoint, which is a subjective thing, but it does react differently if the guides are placed properly on the blank versus a chart. And there's charts out there that say that a 5-weight, 9-foot long blank, this is where the stripper guide goes. And I do something a little different in the stripper guide section of the rod. I put a second and occasionally even a third stripper guide to tame the rod or tame the line to the rod blank, which creates a vortex during casting to reduce friction. So, you know, and then the guides are placed all the way up to the tip top, you know, to maximize the performance.
That's it on the guide. And that's one of the unique things about the rod that you built for me is that, yeah, that lower end, there's the guides, there's a couple on the stripping guides are, you know, pretty close together. So basically what you're saying is you, from that blank, you bend it at a certain, you said 90 degrees, and then you can see, describe that process a little bit. So when you bend it, how can you tell, as opposed to, you know, following some system, like on my rod specifically, that those guides, you know, you added an extra guide down at the bottom?
Yeah. So I clamp the rod into a holder, that holds the blank steady. And then I bend the tip of the rod to 90 degrees. The fellow that I mentioned earlier, Don Morton, who developed the equal angle system, which I really subscribe to. I get it. I understand it. I understand the physics and the geometry of it. I use his design to determine then where the guide's going to be on a given blank. There's no numerical value given to the chart whatsoever. It just shows as the rod bends in an equal angle, here's where the guide should be. So I use that chart, the guide chart.
Yeah.
It's a bend chart, actually, where the rod flexes, called the equal angle. And as you bend your rod to its maximum 90 degree bend, you should never ever flex a graphite carbon fiber blank beyond 90 degrees. The rod potentially will come apart. It will break. But it's at its maximum efficiency at 90 degrees. And you can fight an awful big fish with some pretty light gear if the rod is designed properly using that equal angle system. So if you go into a sporting goods store, there's some great rods out there. There's no question about it. And, you know, I don't want to drop any manufacturers' names because I'll leave somebody out unintentionally. But all of the rods look exactly the same. All 5-weight rods, 9-foot long for his rods and his on the rack.
Yeah.
They all line up. The guides line up exactly in the same thing. You could shoot an arrow through them. But that's not the right way to do it. It looks great on the sporting goods shelf. Absolutely looks nice, you know, really beautiful. But he hasn't maximized the efficiency of his rod line.
And is that from the guide spacing? Is that more for getting it right so it actually, you know, casts better, or is it more for like playing fish, or both?
It's both. I'm really interested in casting performance. Accuracy, distance go together. If a rod is set up on its inherent spine and every tube has a spine or a backbone to it, it's not a spline, S-P-L-I-N-E, it's a spine, S-P-I-N-E, a spine. You and I have a spine as well. It's called our backbone, and it allows us to bend from our waist forward. We can pick up a tremendous amount of weight with the strength that's in our spine. Likewise, in a fishing rod, you can manage a big fish with the spine being properly placed, the guides being properly placed on that spine versus a rod that's off the spine. Conversely, when you cast that rod, fly rod or a gear rod, doesn't make any difference. When you cast that rod, if it's properly set up, if the guide train is properly set up on that rod, you'll get greater casting distance and your accuracy of casts are going to improve immensely. It's just like shooting an arrow. You know, the projector or the projection of that arrow goes in the direction that you pointed it. Doesn't go left or right. Unlike your golf game, when you hit a golf ball, if you're like me, you don't have a clue about where that ball's going to go. But when you cast a properly aligned fishing rod, fly or a gear rod, doesn't make any difference. The projectile, the lure, the fly will land precisely where you cast to. It's amazing. It's an amazing phenomenon that occurs. And the reason, you know, begs a question, well, why don't the manufacturers do this?
Yeah.
Why don't they build on the spine? Well, it takes time to set it up. It takes time to wrap one or two or maybe three additional guides on that rod blank. And at the end of the day, there's a thing called profit that is necessary in a manufacturing facility. And if the rod design engineer can make a satisfactory rod and eliminate one or two guides from every rod that is built in his factory on a daily basis, that difference goes to the company's bottom line. Where a custom builder is building, like me, is building a rod one at a time. I built your rod. I didn't have, well, I probably had a couple other rods in the queue, but I spent my time building your rod to your specifications at the way the rod blank wanted it built. I didn't pay any attention whatsoever to some cockamania guide chart rating that says this is where the guides go on this on a rod blank. I didn't do that.
Yeah, I gotcha. No, that makes sense. And you mentioned the factory a few times, and I know you have a story, I think, about kind of your first time in a factory. I'm not sure if that was St. Croix. Can you talk about that story? Was this before you got into rod building?
No, it was after. After I got into rod building, I really became interested in how rod blanks were made. And I was fortunate to be in Woodland, Washington for a rod builders gathering. And that's where I actually met Gary Loomis for the first time and went through his factory. He took me through his G. Loomis factory in Woodland. This is 20 years ago. And when he was in his prime and really was building some exquisite rods at the time. And I learned a great deal about rod building at that point. And then I think the next year I went back to Woodland and to a rod builders gathering that Lamaglass had put together. And I built a rod at Lamaglass in their factory on a Saturday. And then I started a group of rod builders in Minnesota. And I called my friend Jason Bruner, who's the rod design engineer at St. Croix, and asked if we could come over and go through their factory and watch how rods are built. And just open-armed, they said, absolutely, come on over. We'd be tickled to death to have you come over. So I think we took 8 or 9 people over to St. Croix on a weekend. And unknowing to us, when we got there, they said, how would you like to build your own rod? And we went back into the factory and we actually cut the scrim material to a design, they're called flags, and tacked that scrim onto a mandrel with a hot iron, rolled the balance of the scrim material onto the mandrel, coated it with cellophane. It was hung in a cabinet and it was baked to cure the resin in the rod. And then the mandrel was hydraulically removed from the tube. The rod blank was sanded. It was measured to be sure that it met the specifications, the specification tolerance for that particular rod blank. And we were able to take that rod home. They actually gave it to us. So that was a real treat. And since then, they have discontinued doing that for some proprietary reasons, because there's some sweet sauce that's being mixed in a rod factory, and there are some people who would sell that idea or that photograph or something, right. and you know, that's just not the right thing to do, and so that's been discontinued. But yeah, that's how I really learned a lot about the actions and power of rods and how they're put together. And then over time, the materials that go into the rod blank have really morphed as well. There's some very, very lightweight carbon fiber material today that is just exquisite, that really is superb stuff. And you have a very strong, very lightweight. It's just a pleasure to work with. And then it's even a greater pleasure to fish with.
Yeah. It is. And that's what I noticed when I took your rod out there, you know, right away from the first time just casting, is that it definitely, you know, is really nice to cast. You know what I mean? It's lightweight. And that blank was specifically, can you describe that a little bit, what that one is? That was, I think it was a 9 foot, or let's see, is it 9 foot 4 weight? I can't remember if it's 8.5 or 9.
I think yours was a 9 foot 4 weight.
Yeah, that's right.
And it was it's a Rain Shadow Eternity 2. It's a brand new blank. It's the finest carbon fiber fabric known to mankind. It's just, you know, it's extraordinary. It's unsurpassed and revolutionary in its makeup. And they just produce impeccable rods like the one that you have.
Yeah. And it's blue. The blank's actually blue.
Yeah, it's a cobalt blue blank. It's really pretty. Just, you know, it's not flashy, but yet it's got a neat color to it.
Yeah.
Neutral blue.
It's a subtle flashiness. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really a great graphite blank.
Yeah, yeah. And so on these rods, and you mentioned, you know, obviously Woodland, we talked, we had Kerry Berkheimer, who has Berkheimer rods, you know.
Yeah, sure. Yeah,
and he talked about the process of, you know, how he gets it and how he builds his rods and things like that. But I asked him about the Woodland Washington because I said, hey, it seems like a lot of rod builders are coming out of Woodland. And you mentioned a few of them, Lamb of Glass and G. Loomis. How about in your neck of the woods over there? Do you see, I mean, are there quite a few rod builders? I mean, obviously, you know, there are some big companies as you go across, you know, the country. But what's your take on if you look around? You mentioned some mentors around the world. Are there just great rod builders, rod companies all over the country, all over the world?
Well, yeah, I think there's rod builders all over the world. There's no question of that, that build one or two or a dozen rods a year and, you know, call them custom rod builders. Yeah, you know, that's out there. They're, for the most part, those are hobbyist rod builders. They're building a rod for themselves. They're building a rod for themselves or for a friend or a family member. But when you start building in terms of 50, 60, 70, 100, 150 rods a year, you know, that becomes a business. And I don't know that there are all that many professional custom rod builders out there. There's certainly a handful. But for manufacturers, you know, there's people like St. Croix and Lamb of Glass and Rain Shadow, and there's three or four other minor companies around that build rods for very specific purposes. For example, there's a couple of builders or a couple of manufacturers in California that build saltwater rods, big, heavy duty tuna sticks, you know, that will tackle 150 pound fish. And same thing down in Florida. There's a manufacturer of rod blanks in Florida that build rods for grouper and other saltwater fish that are out in the deep water and they're just broomsticks. You know, it's not something that I would fish with in Minnesota because we just don't have fish that big, nor would you fish for them if you were out in a stream in Washington or Oregon or whatever. You know, they're just, you know, it's just not appropriate. But then there's some other manufacturers scattered around the world. There's one in the UK. There's another really exquisite manufacturer in New Zealand. I've only built one of on one of their rod blanks, but it's really nice stuff. But there's sufficient rod manufacturers around the U.S. that can keep me satisfied with, you know, some ultra high quality stuff that's what I use. You know, that's what I use.
That's it. And do you build, like, so we've been talking about this rod, this trout rod that you built for me. Well, what are the different types of rods, you know, you build? Do you build, like, all species? You know, is there a certain size of rod you don't go? But talk about the diversity of the type. If somebody wanted to come in and just have some random species, could you build a rod for them?
I think I could, yeah. The techniques of building the rod, finishing that rod from a blank onto a finished rod, the techniques are pretty much the same. There's a few variables that go into it, of course, but basically they're the same. And I live and work in an area where we're primarily gear chasers, you know, spinning rods and casting rods for walleye, for bass, northern pike, and muskie fishing. And there's some guys that are chasing pike and muskies with a fly rod, and that includes me. I have hooked, didn't get the fish in, but I had the hook. I had a hook set in the biggest northern pike that I've ever seen in my life. We tussled with each other on a 9-weight for seemed like an eternity, but it was probably 15 or 20 minutes in actuality. You know, fishermen always will stretch the truth a little bit. But nonetheless, it was a huge fish. And it really hooked me into fly fishing for larger fish. I've attempted to catch a muskie with a fly and have been unsuccessful, but I've caught several pike and I've caught bass and trout. I tried in Alaska for salmon on a fly rod, and the conditions and where we were at were just not conducive to really using a fly rod. That isn't what the rest of the people wanted to do, and
right.
So I had to lay back a little bit. But nonetheless, yeah, But yeah. in the Midwest, there's primarily gear fishermen, but there's a good number of fly fishermen as well.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, the Midwest 100% is a hot spot. I know because we have a lot of people that reach out to me from the Midwest, fly fishermen and women, and yeah, it's 100%. It's a hot spot, which is cool. And I love the pike and muskie. We're going to hopefully dig into a few more of those episodes on pike and muskie coming up here in the recent future. I wanted to hit on one. You got some more other stories you've noted to me. One of them was Jesse the Body Ventura. You built some rods, right? So I want to hear this because this is classic. Love. First of all, I love that story. I always love it. It's like Arnold Schwarzenegger, right? You know, and all these things where you got these people kind of becoming, you know, mayors and governors and senators. But so talk about that. How do you come to build rods for how this Jesse Ventura thing happened?
Oh, yeah. This is a fun story. Jesse was the governor of Minnesota, and the opening weekend of walleye season traditionally is called the governor's fishing opener. Well, it so happened that this was 23 years ago. The governor's fishing opener was going to be on the lake that we live on. And across the bay from us, the chairman of the governor's fishing opener committee lives. And he knew that I was building custom rods. I had just gotten started. In fact, I hadn't yet done this. I just started building custom rods. And Marv Kep, who was a chairman of the committee, called me and he said, "Hey, how would you like to build a rod for the governor who's going to be at the opener in May?" This was like in early January. And I swallowed hard and thought about it for just a second or two. And I said, "Okay, I'll do that." And he says, "Well, you know, you need to build two rods because you got to build one for his wife as well." Okay, I can do that. So 6 or 8 weeks later, there was a rod builders gathering in Nashville, Tennessee. And we went to Nashville to that get together. And the keynote speaker was my buddy, Gary Loomis. And fortunately, I got to sit next to him at dinner. And really got into his head about rod blanks and on and on and on. We talked a little bit about that earlier. But after dinner was over with, I won a blank that Gary Loomis had donated as a door prize. So I asked Gary told him what was going on, that I was going to build this rod out for the governor's fishing opener, and I was going to give it to Jesse Ventura. And I said, "I'd really like to have you sign this rod." And Gary swallowed hard and he said, "You know, I really don't sign my name on things that aren't mine, that I have control over." But right. He says, "I believe what you're going to do." And he signed on this rod blank his signature, his very famous signature. So I brought that rod blank home and treated it like fragile eggs and was very, very careful with it. Built the rod out and presented that to the governor at the banquet the night before the fishing opener. And he was chewing on a cigar at the time and of course dressed in his fishing gear. And he's a big hulk of a man. He's a great big guy. And he was very appreciative of the gift. His wife likewise was appreciative, and he went fishing the next day with somebody from the news media. And shortly after they got out on the water that morning, he did catch a fish, and the picture of the rod, him smoking a cigar and holding the fish up, was published all over the Midwest. And
oh, it was. You know,
he was a very colorful character, not only as a professional wrestler, but he also was very colorful as a governor. You know?
For those that don't know, Jesse Ventura was a WWF, right? He was a wrestler, like a professional wrestler.
Yeah, I think so.
yeah.
He was a character.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Nice. Well, that is a good story. I love that you brought in Gary Loomis as well. So that rod you won was actually a blank. You won a Loomis blank, essentially.
I won the Loomis blank, and then I built it out. Of course, I didn't. It was a gift. It was a surprise gift to him. So I didn't have the opportunity to actually measure his hand and arm like I like I did for you.
Yeah.
And for everybody else that I built a rod for, but I kind of guessed as to what he was going to do. And it was a spinning rod. So that was pretty cool. That really was the start of me getting involved professionally as a rod builder. It took it from a hobby kind of a thing into a small business.
That's it. Okay. I think we're going to wrap this up here, Chris, pretty quick, but wanted to check with you on just a couple things before we get out of here. First of all, you mentioned, a couple stories here, and, if people want to get into this, if they're interested in getting a rod, where do we send folks to, what's the best way to connect with you? Like, do they call you? Do they just go to your website? What should they do?
I think the first thing to do would be go to our website, lakeladyrods.com. It's a very robust, information-filled website. It's quite deep. And after you have taken a look at some of the pictures in the gallery and read a little bit about what we do and how we do it, then give me a phone call. It's always good to be able to visit with people about what they want. And then we can talk about options and different techniques and different aesthetics and whatever we're going to do to the rod that you want built. And then I will send you a diagram of this hand and arm so we get those measurements correct. And then we'll quote a price and build that rod to your specifications and ship it to you. Or if you're close by, you could certainly stop by our shop and visit here too. That's fine. A lot of people do that. As we scatter across the country, it becomes impossible to sit down for an interview in my shop. We just can't do it, but we could do it over Skype or we could do it over the phone and we share stuff. It's pretty easy to do electronically.
Okay. And if somebody's out there and they're, listening to this and they want a custom rod, but maybe they, don't go to you, or maybe there's, a custom rod builder nearby that they know that they want to go to, what sort of advice would you give that person if they're going to get a custom rod from, say, somebody else out there before they jump into it? What would you tell somebody?
Well, there's a lot of people out there that are hobbyists that are building rods, and some of them do a really great job. There's no question. But then there are some guys that are nothing more than assemblers of parts. And you got to be a little bit careful about those people, because are they really building a custom rod, or are they just assembling parts on a rod blank? And there's some unscrupulous people out there as well that build on rejects or seconds that don't meet a specific requirement from an engineering standpoint, and they are sold in the aftermarket. And there's people that build on that stuff and try to portray that it's a top line rod blank, which of course and obviously it's not. Got to watch out for that kind of stuff. But quality builders will build on quality parts, and they have a reputation. You need to check that reputation out. Check out the comments that are left by other people as to what they do.
Yep.
It's common sense, and you're going to get what you pay for. If you're using top end stuff, high quality, it costs a bit more to go first class than it does to ride coach, but you'll still get there. You'll still get from point A to B. You'll still catch fish, but there's something about the pride of ownership when you've got really some fine stuff that is made for you. The shoe analogy, we all wear shoes. That's just you and I trade shoes to see if mine fit your feet. I'd bet you a bunch that they don't.
No.
And we're different. We have different desires, different likes, and you need to find somebody that builds a rod that understands that we're different, and go through that interview process to be sure that he understands what you want and you understand what you're about to get into.
Right.
We do that. We're an open book.
Yeah. Is the analogy between like the golf club a good one, where it's like you get and I don't even know what that looks like, but you get a custom set of golf clubs or a custom golf club made for your, versus just buying a golf club off the shelf? Is it kind of similar there?
I think it's very similar. Yeah. Professional golfers wouldn't go to a golf shop the pro shop at the golf course and buy a set of clubs. You know, they wouldn't even think of that. They're going to have that club built exactly to their stature and how they swing and on and on and on. Same things going on with rods, you know. Yeah, that club that you buy at the golf course, you know, it'll hit a ball and it'll go down the fairway. Sure, it will. But if it were custom built for you and the length and the grip and everything else that goes on to it, the head and the weight, you know, if it were built just for you, just the pride of ownership will send that ball further down the fairway.
Yep, exactly. Yeah, that's perfect. And that's what it comes down to. And obviously a lot of people listening here, you don't have to get a custom rod to have a great day fishing on the water. But I think as you get into it, the more you do it, you know, you find, you know, if you do find a custom rod, it just adds a little bit. You know, you're sitting there in the river and you're kicking back, you know, maybe relaxing, and you got this, you know, this beautiful custom rod. And you know what I mean? The rod you built me is one of those things that, you know, I'll have forever. And like I have all my rods, you know, I got an old, you mentioned Lamiglass. I've said this before, but my first steelhead rod, my dad got me, was a Lamiglass, just a factory built Lamiglass. And I still have that rod. It's one of my, you know, something I'll always have, you know what I mean? Just so.
Sure.
It's cool. And it's cool to connect with you because it's a custom, right? You do this custom thing that we talked about today. And if people want to go a little deeper and spend a little bit more money, then they can connect with you or somebody like you.
Yeah, that's right. You know, and one of our sayings that we use is our rods will actually catch more fish.
They will. And
it's true. That's a true statement. You'll treat it differently and you'll fish with it with more accuracy and just surgical accuracy of casting. You know, if you don't present the fly properly to the fish is going to ignore that presentation. But if you can lay the fly perfectly in front of the fish's face, his tendency to survive is to kill that fly. And if the rod performs the way it should, and you lay the fly onto the water the way it should, the fish will bite. You know, they'll attack that artificial fly, that bait, and you will catch more fish.
You will catch more fish. And that's probably the best. Another great point to take home here is that we've talked about a lot on this show. We've talked about casting and all the different ends of fly fishing. And if you're talking about dry fly fishing or whatever, there are times when you have to hit not only a pie plate, but even getting more surgical in that spot if you want to get it to that fish. That's come up a number of times. So what you're saying is that your rod actually is going to be more accurate and allow you, and that's how you're going to essentially catch more fish.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, that's it. So yeah, so before we get out of here, we are going to be doing something special for listeners of this show, and this is going to be a giveaway of a custom-built rod. And you've described the process, a little bit of it today, and building my rod, and you're going to walk the winner through a similar process. So let's talk about that. What do you think, you know, this giveaway actually, this is not just this is a serious deal, right? Talk about how that's going to work once we have the winner.
Well, I think the way we ought to work is folks listening to us chatter today on the Wet Fly Swing podcast, enter the contest for a 5-weight, 9-foot Lake Lady fly rod built on an Eternity rod blank with a custom burl cork handle with birch bark inlays. Your choice of colors. It'll have a rod sock with your name embroidered on it, and it'll come in an aluminum tube to protect the rod. And when the rod's done, it'll have a value of about $1,000.
Mm-hmm.
Really, a top end, high end, great rod just for the listeners of the Wet Fly Swing podcast, and in conjunction with, of course, Lake Lady Rods. So enter the contest and Dave is going to draw the name at the end of the contest, and we'll get in touch with you and build this rod out to your specifications and get it to you. And then you're going to have to tell us about how you fish it and show us some pictures of fish that you've caught.
That's right. For the winner of this, we'll definitely follow up, and we'll put it at wetflyswing.com/lakeladygiveaway. That'll be the link that people can check out, and that'll direct them over to enter the giveaway. And this is going to be awesome. I mean, this is a huge, obviously, this is no small giveaway. This is a big deal. So I want to thank you in advance, Chris, for doing this. This is definitely a cool deal for listeners to get a chance at this. And I guess other than that, in the next year, anything else you got coming new for you, or are you going to keep just kind of doing the same good stuff?
Well, I think there's going to be some new materials come out for rod blanks. There's some scuttlebutt that there's some new fabric that's coming. And of course, there's a race in the chemical side of it with resins, the molecular redesigned resins. That's a quote of It means a lot of different things to different people. But the resins that bind the carbon fiber together, there's a race going on with the manufacturers of rod blanks to really lighten up the rods, but yet create the sensitivity that is so important for us to feel the bite, to feel the strike, and yet strong enough to fight big fish without breaking the rod. So weight is being dissipated. Some of this material is just as light as a feather versus some of the old fiberglass stuff that we had a couple, three decades ago that our granddads or our dads even fished with. You know, it's just the stuff that's available today and that's then on the horizon that's coming is really going to be a game changer in the fishing industry. And for those of us that build on high-end stuff, we can't wait to get our hands on some of this. And yeah, it's expensive, but the treat is, you know, would you rather drive a Chevy or a Lexus?
Right. Yeah.
You know, how do you get down the road from A to B? The Chevy will get you there for sure. No question about it. But the Lexus is really a fine ride. Yeah. And same analogy is true in rods. You can, every fishing rod will catch a fish. There's no question of that. But how much fun is it to fish with a Snoopy pole? it just wasn't fun at all. As we gain in our knowledge of fishing and chasing different species and trying to catch the biggest fish that swims, we need equipment to go along with it. And that's really what we strive to do, is build fishing rods as individual as you are, using the very finest materials that we can get our hands on. And we take pride in that. It takes some additional time to get it right. And that's what we do. Each rod is built one at a time. I have no inventory of finished rods. None. Zero.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Every rod is built for somebody, for a reason. And I can't build a custom rod and call it a custom rod and just pull it off of the shelf and hand it to you. That's not right.
Right.
Doesn't fit you.
Yeah, that's
it. Go back to the shoe analogy that we talked about earlier. It just doesn't fit.
Yeah, that's right. Nice. Perfect, Chris. Well, this has been great. I appreciate you, shedding some light on your process and definitely digging into the giveaway. This is all awesome. So, excited to keep in touch and move forward with everything. And thanks again for the time today.
Yeah, you're welcome. It's been fun I've enjoyed it very much. Thanks, Dave.
So there you go. If you want to find the show notes, the links and everything we covered today, head over to wetflyswing.com/lakeladyrods. And check it out. This also includes, there'll be a link to the giveaway there at the top. That is a wrap for today. A wrap. We talked about rod wrapping. I'm thinking about burrito wraps right now. I would love to have a bacon and egg burrito with some salsa on it. That would be amazing right now. I'm going to have to settle for a Pro Bar. That's kind of what I got right now. So I would love it. I would embrace the Pro Bar. I hope you embrace this episode. I hope you enjoyed hearing a little bit of Chris's story and the passion. I think the passion came out in his rod building. He has a lot of fun with this. So appreciate you for sticking around and listening to this one all the way till the end. And as always, if you have an idea for a story, an idea for an episode, an idea for a guest, you can reach out to me anytime, dave@wetflyswing.com. Or on social media. I would love to see a lightning bolt emoji out there if you can. Or just send me a DM and say, let me know you listened to this episode if it resonated with you. Whew, deep breath. Did I do that all in one breath? Okay. You have a great day, wherever you are, morning, noon, or night. Love it. And we'll talk to you soon. Hopefully on the water. Hopefully on the river. Hopefully online.
Thanks for listening to the Wet Fly Swing Fly Fishing Show. For notes and links from this episode, visit wetflyswing.com.